Welcome, everyone, to Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri with Beverly Cascaden and Chip Haley. Sponsored by the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Greetings and salutations, everyone, and welcome to Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. I'm Chip Haley.
And I'm Beverly Cascaden.
Well, how you doing, Bev? It's been a little bit since we talked last.
It has, and last week I was dealing with all the allergy symptoms going around, and I've been told I sound better, so I must have sounded really bad before.
Well, tell me, I don't know whether, not just that you didn't sound bad, but you didn't look all that great either. I mean, that's what you were telling me.
Yes. So a good reason to stay in.
Yeah. You were telling me the left side of your face was all puffy and so.
Yes, the left side, it just attacked my left side of my face.
That had to be a weird feeling.
Even to sleep, I noticed, because I like to toss and turn to side. And I thought, can't even sleep on the left side. But we get through it, and I feel empathy for anybody else that deals with severe allergies, taking the medicine, then you're groggy.
That's right. Well, it bothers me as well. I take medication for it. Sometimes it seems like it helps. Other times it just, it's just a matter of time before I can actually get over it. But right now I'm doing great. Life is good, and it just couldn't be any better. I'm just having a good time. So
yes, we just need some rain. If you could do a rain dance out
I'll put in an order for it. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct pleasure to bring on at this time our very special guest. We're just so happy and delighted to have this young lady on to be our guest. She has graciously consented to come on and allow Bev and I to interview her. We've just been so looking forward to this time to interview her. So it gives me the greatest pleasure to bring on at this time Christina Caracella. I know she likes to go by Chris. Chris, welcome to Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for that introduction. I really appreciate being here. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. So we talked a little bit briefly before we started the recording, how Bev and I like to do things. So talk to us a little bit about your vision loss. What was the cause or results? How long have you been visually impaired? So the floor is yours. So just share with us very briefly, what is the cause and result of your vision loss?
Okay. I have glaucoma. I'm in the severe stage of glaucoma. I was originally diagnosed about 40 years ago. I was diagnosed very young with the high pressure and started taking glaucoma drops in my late 20s. Having glaucoma wasn't a surprise because my dad had it, my grandfather had it. We knew there was a family history of it. And I have 5 siblings, so statistically, at least, one or two of us were going to have glaucoma. So after many surgeries over the years and many changes in drops and all different kinds of treatment, I started losing my vision in 2016. I lost all the vision in my right eye. And then since then, continue to lose vision in my left eye. So at this point, I only see out of the left side of my left eye. I need to use glasses for reading. And I'm starting to lose the light perception. So I have magnifiers with lights with me all the time to be able to read things and anything else that I might be able to use to help me on day-to-day activities with vision.
Okay, very, very, very good. So about when did all this start?
Let's see. So it would have been 40 years ago. I'm 68 years old, and I was first diagnosed when I was like 27, 28 years old.
Oh, okay. All right. So you begin to experience it right around your late 20s then. Okay, very, very good. Are you married?
Divorced.
Divorced, okay. And any children?
No, no kids.
All right. And
what
I'm about
the best answer is out there.
And how about any siblings?
I have, there were six kids in our family. We're a Italian Catholic family here. We grew up here in St. Louis. Uh-huh. And so three boys, three girls. And so there were six of us.
All right. Very good. And you make your home there in St. Louis?
I'm in St. Louis now. Yes. I've lived all over the country, mainly for work and some other personal choices. But in Missouri, I've lived in St. Louis and also in Kansas City.
All right. How long have you been in St. Louis?
I came back about 10 years ago.
Okay. And how long were you in Kansas City?
Oh, gosh. When I first moved to Kansas City, let's see, I probably was there a total of 5 years. And then I started, I went to work for in the mortgage industry, and I got transferred around a bunch. And then I went to work for the financial services division of General Electric and got transferred around the country to a bunch of different cities too. So then I ended up in Colorado, and some of my family had moved to Colorado also. So after living in Colorado for 10 years, then I came back here in 2014. So almost 11 years now.
Okay. And so where were you actually born and where did you originate from?
I was born at St. Mary's Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Very good. As you mentioned, you've just been all over the country, which, you know, in a lot of ways that can be a blessing. You can really get to see some really great parts of the country. So, and I know you've had to battle a little bit with your vision loss. So had that hampered your being able to get out and see a lot of the country?
So when I first lost the vision in my right eye in 2016, so before that I had not lost vision to the point where anything had impeded any kind of work. So my vision was correctable. And even though I had lost some peripheral vision, it didn't really affect day-to-day activities. But then in 2016, when I lost all the vision in my right eye, I was CEO of a higher education international nonprofit. And I had a lot of travel around the world. And so I started noticing differences then because, you know, as you both probably know, when you lose vision in one eye, then you don't have depth perception any longer. And so I started noticing differences in terms of, you know, just walking or even getting on planes mm-hmm. because, you know, the lip of the plane is not even with the, you know, when you're walking down there. So, you know, I was embarrassed at the time, but I'm not too embarrassed to say at this point that there were a few times I, you know, tripped into the arms of some flight attendants as I got on plane.
Yeah.
You can't tell and if you don't see it.
Yeah.
And, you know, steps were a problem and escalators and things
sure.
like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I started adapting to, you know, being able to, how do you get around all this travel with no depth perception and started adapting different ways there. But then once, you know, the vision continued to worsen, then it became if I was traveling, I would need to have somebody with me for me to feel safe and for me to feel comfortable. I liked having, you know, somebody traveling with me.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's back it up a little bit. Let's talk a little bit now about mm-hmm. your education. Did you go to college then? I guess you probably did.
I did. I graduated from St. Louis University.
Oh, excellent. Okay. And what was your degree?
Organizational psychology.
All right. Good. Very good.
Wow.
Yeah. I tell you, Bev, listening to her, I mean, wow, what a place that we could find for her in BLVCM. That would really be awesome. So, so basically, is that the kind of work you've pretty much done all your life?
First it was in financial services, my early career. And so with the financial services part, that led me to, I was a senior vice president in GE Capital. And then having been with GE for 11 years, I decided that I wanted to do some things on my own. And so I started a consulting business where all the work was with corporate and nonprofit clients, and everything was around leadership development and strategic planning and wow. those sorts of activities. And then because I had so many nonprofit clients, I ended up going into the nonprofit sector. I was asked to take over a nonprofit that was in the addiction recovery industry that was out in Colorado. So they were getting an organization going. And then I was recruited for the position that was here in St. Louis back in 2014. And I thought it was a good time to, you know, come back. It was a great opportunity for, you know, a big global job. And so I came back. It was like, how can I not do that? I can come home. I, you know, still have family here and cousins and brothers, and my mom was still alive at that point. And so it was nice to be able to come back home and have a great job and get back involved in the St. Louis community.
All right. Very good. Now, before I push it over to Bev, I got one more question. So you mentioned your siblings. Are you, all of you and your siblings real close?
Yeah, we are. No, two of them have passed away. Uh-huh. But the four of us that are still around, yes, we're very close.
All right, good. So you all get together occasionally, whether it's holidays, whatever it might be?
I have our sister lives in Colorado. She's out in Boulder. And then I have a brother here in Webster Groves and another brother in New Haven, Missouri. So those of us in Missouri get together more frequently than, you know, we can with our sister in Colorado.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
you know, we
yeah.
talk to her all the time.
All right. Very, very, very good. I'm going to push it over to Bev because I know you're not going to believe this, Chris. But if I don't give her due here on Who's Who, she actually sends me hate mail. And I get all this hate mail that I have to go through. So, Bev, I'm going to push it over to you.
Yeah, he's told everybody I've got a saggy left side of my face.
Yeah, I think it's time to get even, Bev. Let's go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. We do have fun. We do
yes,
have
we
fun.
Do.
And it's so good to get to know people. And I'm so glad I just picked, I did not know Chris, you know, and I thought, oh, that's someone to interview, someone you don't know. And I have so enjoyed just visiting with her from time to time. And I think we're going to have to continue this friendship on too, Chris, because.
Sounds good to me.
Got a lot of things in common, I believe. Well, starting off, that you said you had glaucoma.
Mm-hmm.
I have three daughters, and they each have, well, not the youngest daughter doesn't have any kids, but my grandson that's in Kansas City, he was born with cataracts and glaucoma.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so to see this little baby going through, oh, he's 12 now. But he's been taking eye drops and surgery. And one time when he had to have the glaucoma surgery, his mom told me he looked up while trying to eat dinner and said, "Now I know how Nana does it." And he's more empathetic to me. He'll come and take my hand whenever I get up to go someplace. Uh-huh. Oh, gosh, we just want to wave a magic wand and take it all away from him.
Yeah.
You know, but where in Kansas City were you?
When I first moved out there, I was in Overland Park, Kansas, and then moved over to the Missouri side, and I was on the Country Club Plaza.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Neat area. I was just out
there. I love
there.
That area.
My daughter's in Gladstone.
Okay.
And she's a teacher, and my son-in-law's a teacher, and nice area. I really like Kansas City, too. But of all the places of travel you've been, where do you find it the easiest with a vision impaired? I'm taking it you drove at one time, but not now.
Yes, I stopped driving 4 years ago. It occurred to me that after having two car accidents and scraping the right side of my car a couple of times and almost hitting somebody on a sidewalk, it might be time to stop.
Oh, my.
Fortunately, the accident was minor.
Yes, stay off the sidewalks.
The accidents were minor. Nobody got hurt except my car. And I was pulling into a parking garage, ironically, on my way to see the ophthalmologist. And it's a parking garage at the eye center, the WashU Eye Center down at Barnes. And so going from bright sunlight into a dark garage, there was a gentleman in a gray suit who started walking across in front of my car, and I didn't see him because of my light sensitivity. I couldn't see like somebody in gray. And, so he started walking in front of the car, and as the arm went up, when I pulled out the ticket and I started to move forward, I almost hit him, and it caught him obviously by surprise. And he started pounding on the hood of my car. He was rightly so upset that, you know, I almost hit him. And so, after profusely apologizing but he wasn't having it. You know, so I went in to see the ophthalmologist, and I said, I think today's the last day I can drive. And she said, well, it doesn't seem like your vision would be that bad. And I said, yeah, but I don't feel safe driving. And I explained to her what just happened. And so she said that it's your decision. She said, you're not at the point where I would tell you you cannot drive any longer. But the important thing is, if you don't feel like you should be driving, then don't drive. And so that was the last day I drove. And, you know, it was a big part of, you know, giving up independence. You know, the ability to come and go as I wanted to. And, you know, that was hard, but, you know, safety first. And, you know, I just didn't want to take a chance on hurting myself, someone else. You know, it just wasn't worth it. So, yeah, I stopped driving 4 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. And that is good that you made that decision instead of somebody else doing it for you.
Yes.
But it is difficult. I know. I drove for 7 years. And but I was in more of a smaller town area, too. And then coming to St. Louis, you know.
Sure.
Who wants to drive here?
You know? Yeah.
So the first part of your question, Beverly, I want to make sure I don't miss it, was about traveling. And then I went off on a little detour about the driving part. So what was the first part of your question?
Getting around, you know, was there good buses or transits in some of the areas? Do you find one area better than another one?
So for right now, it's easy for me to be able to walk to, and that's also what made the decision to not drive easier, because I can walk to several different shopping centers. I can walk to like where my hair salon is, where the nail salon is. I'm exactly a mile from the Society for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And so when I volunteer there or when I go to activities there, you know, it's an easy walk just straight down Brentwood Boulevard to get there. And then as a client of the Society for the Blind, I can take advantage of their shuttle service, different places. And then also in Brentwood, they have what they call the Magic Bus, and it's free transportation on a shuttle bus for people either over the age of 60 or with some kind of disability. So Monday through Thursday, there are drivers, a driver available, where if you need to go someplace within a limited range, it's mostly like Brentwood, Webster Grove, a little bit of Richmond Heights, I think, maybe a little bit of Kirkwood, that shuttle bus can take me. And so with either walking those shuttle services, you know, I use Lyft a lot if I need to, you know, and, you know, friends and family, that's really how I get around.
That's great. And where I live, you've got to drive just about everywhere, you know, to get to anything. I did find a hairdresser that comes to my house.
Oh, even better. Even better.
That's great. You know, but I have been told that Missouri is one of the best states, you know, for visually impaired people, you know, with different things that are available here that they don't have in other states. Did you run across that? Or did you even need it when you were in Colorado or...
I didn't need it in other states yet. So it didn't, I didn't need any kind of accessibility issue. I didn't have accessibility issues until I was back in Missouri. And that day that I talked to my ophthalmologist about no longer driving, she told me about the Society for the Blind and Visually Impaired. She said I might enjoy connecting with people there and also getting tested and going through the occupational training and the orientation and mobility training. So that's what I did. I got an appointment with them And so that's where I had any kind of accessibility training and knowledge came through the Society for the Blind and Visually Impaired.
Wow, good. I'm so glad your doctor recommended that, because a lot of times the doctors, they deal with the medical end, but not the emotional end either. So that was great of her. So
yeah, I think it was because I was sitting in her chair crying. It might have been a clue that she needed to refer me.
Hey, did you cry in front of the guy that you almost ran over?
No. I was too afraid he was going to be mad at me and, you know, try to come over to the window. But when I was sitting in the chair with her and we talked about, you know, just how serious my vision loss was and how, you know, it's just, it's going to get worse. And I'm part of that percentage of people that, you know, no matter what you do with glaucoma in terms of drops and surgery, that it's likely not going to make a difference. You know, there's a percentage of us that get that. So, you know, I'm in that group of people. So, you know, and I know with my dad and with my grandfather that, you know, they both were completely blind later in life. And so, you know, I just, as my ophthalmologist and I had that conversation, you know, I just had tears streaming down my face because it was just that hard reality of, you know, when you stop driving, that's like one step of this is how bad my vision's getting. And this is, you know, it's going to get much worse. And so I think that realization of vision loss hit me at that point. And so, yeah, I had, you know, tears. And so she's like, okay, so let's talk about, you know, some options for you. And I think there's this organization that you would really enjoy connecting with. And then, you know, so that's when she told me about them.
Well, great. No, that's great. I tell you, what it hit me is when someone came from the Society of the Blind to my house and she handed me the cane.
Oh, yeah. I'll bet that made a big difference.
The cane did it. Yeah. But boy, it did help a lot, because I would walk my girls up to the bus stop, and when I turn around and come back home and get lost, and I'm in somebody else's garage instead of mine.
Yeah. That can lead to a few awkward moments here and there, but
yeah. So, what kind of work did your dad do if he also had glaucoma?
So my dad spent his entire career with McDonnell Douglas. He was an aeronautical engineer at McDonnell Douglas.
No kidding.
Yeah.
My ex-husband was at McDonnell Douglas, changed over to Boeing, and he was a database administrator there. And McDonnell Douglas was so good about hiring people, too, with vision impairment, too, and giving them all the accommodations that they needed. So kudos to them, you know, for that. So.
Sure.
Did he have to have some accommodations?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. You know, we never talked about that before he passed away, if he needed that when he was there. I think for him, it was he took an early retirement, like at 55, I believe. And I don't think that glaucoma really impacted his day-to-day life until maybe his 70s. I think in his 70s, that's when it really got worse. And he was married, and so his wife was, you know, great about, you know, being his caretaker, and they were living in Texas at the time, and he had just a lot of really severe problems with his eyes that were glaucoma and also macular degeneration related.
Wow. Well, I'm going to bounce around here and let Chip take it. But Chip, let me have it back when you're done. Okay.
Okay.
I love the two of you fighting over me.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. She probably has me on a timer anyway. So, okay. So, Chris, tell me, so did you have to battle any emotions like, you know, anger or any of those different kind of things, grief or whatever sometimes people have to go through before accepting the reality of losing sight? So did you have to deal with any type of emotions?
Sure, because when the reality hits, when, you know, if it still happens every time that there's, you know, something else that I find out, oh, I can't do that anymore, or, oh my gosh, I can't see that anymore, or, you know, I need some other kind of accessibility tool. You know, it just continues. It's frustrating. You know, I'm at that point of acceptance, you know, obviously, because I know what this is. But at the beginning, like when I lost the vision of my right eye, that's when it really hit home. It's like, oh, wait, now after all these surgeries, after all these drops, when I actually started having the vision loss, then it was, okay, now this is serious. And that was hard for me at the beginning, because I just didn't think, like in my family, it didn't happen until later. And so I thought I had more time before I'd have to deal with it. And so it just happened sooner for me. And it just ended up being something that, sure, there were many dark nights of the soul of just lying awake in bed and, you know, just feeling really frightened. You know, there were times of frustration leading to tears and anger about, you know, how this happened. You know, it's the genetic lottery. So it's not like there was anything else I could have done about it. All I could make sure to do is take proper care and treatment, you know, once I knew that it was something that I was dealing with. And, you know, I would kid around with my siblings, you know, at times too, like, you know, okay, of the six of us, it had to be me. Why wasn't any of the rest of you? Yeah, but then over time, you know, my sister in Colorado deals with it. She's had some vision loss, and my sister who passed away was taking glaucoma drops. And then I have a brother who's taking glaucoma drops. So while they're not at the level of vision loss or severity, like they haven't had the surgeries or anything, they're still dealing with the fact that they have glaucoma. And then my sister's daughter recently learned, and she's only like 26. She recently learned that she's got high pressure from an eye exam. And so she knows our family history. And so she was about the same age I was when I found out. And so, you know, it's still through the family, but, the anger, the frustration, the grief of, my life changing, you know, the loss of independence, the loss of just, you know, what my life was before versus my life after. Sure. Yeah. Those emotions are all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. And so, here you are today. Do you feel quite comfortable in your blindness, you know, as a person who is blind, visually impaired?
I think I feel as comfortable as I can under the circumstances. You know, I recently got a pair of Meta glasses, the Ray-Ban Meta glasses.
Yeah.
So those have been a big help for me too. And those I really have enjoyed getting to know how to use those. My boyfriend gave them to me as a birthday present in July. So I've had them for a couple of months, and they have been just really great in terms of what I can do using the glasses, or also just being able to use the glasses to call up, be my eyes, and have, you know, a live person looking through the camera and the glasses helping me cross a major intersection and, you know, that sort of thing. So those have been a great accessibility tool for me that's made me more comfortable in some of the things that I wasn't able or didn't feel comfortable doing myself.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Outstanding. Now, you mentioned the Society for the Blind. So going there and, you know, familiarizing yourself with them and getting acquainted and all that. So have you ever had the opportunity to receive any type of mobility training or other type of training as someone who is blind and has lost their sight?
Yes. So the first step was to see one of the doctors. And so I saw Dr. Boland first, and then that led to me seeing one of the occupational therapists. And it was everything from, like, what kind of light, you know, like table lamp light, or what kind of light was better for a person with glaucoma, and especially because of light sensitivity and how much light I might need to be able to read things or see things, you know, with my glasses. They also helped me set up my phone and my iPad and showed me different ways, all the accessibility features, so that I would be able to use technology as efficiently as possible. And then I talked to, there was the orientation mobility specialist at the time. I took cane training with her because I wasn't sure when I felt like I was going to need the training, but I wanted to be prepared for it.
Sure.
And
yeah.
So I took some lessons with their trainer, and to make sure that, you know, I would be able to know how to use the cane. And then also, one of the things that I'm wondering if it happens to both of you too, where, you know, people seem to think if you lose your vision that all the rest of your senses are
like
all of a sudden I have supersonic hearing or something.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to explain to people, like through the cane training, you know, that it's not a matter of like, oh gee, now I have much better hearing. I learned to listen differently.
You know,
I learned to listen for like where the traffic was, how the wind was, what the sounds were around me. You know, and that's the kind of things that when you have vision, you don't think so much about how
that's
you're
right.
using your hearing. But
that
if you don't have vision and you want to cross a busy intersection, you know, it's like, okay, you're paying attention to what are the sounds around me? Do I feel wind blowing in some direction? You know, just all those other, you use your senses in a different way. And so that was one of the things that I appreciated learning from the orientation and mobility training too. So yes, I have taken advantage of the services there, and I volunteer there occasionally, and I go
Excellent.
To their events. And yeah, I'm a big supporter. I'm a big client and volunteer and supporter of the Society for the Blind and Visually Impaired.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. You mentioned about the Meta glasses, which I think they're absolutely fabulous, and then the iPad and iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other types of technology that you use that help you to enhance your independence, whether at home or wherever else it might be?
I was using a laptop when I first started losing my vision, mostly because I had a laptop for work. But I found that for me, the iPad works better because of only seeing out of the left side of my left eye. Having something that's smaller and something that's easier to operate, you know, makes, so I have an iPad that's on a keypad. And so it's almost like having a laptop, but it's just so much easier because you can use the touchscreen or you can use the keyboard. I don't have a TV any longer because, you know, having a TV with a large screen, I'd have to look from right to left, you know, so I have to keep moving my head back and forth to see something on a big screen like that.
Uh-huh.
So I use the iPad, you know, I use streaming services and I use the iPad if I'm watching something because I can see it much clearer and easier, you know, with just the, you know, the 25% of my eyes that work. But mostly it's the phone.
Sure.
It's the phone now with the glasses. So between the glasses, the phone and the iPad,
yeah,
you know, I feel really confident and comfortable with my technology.
Oh, cool. And do you have like a Echo device?
I don't. No.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Oh, that's okay. And do you get services from Wolfner Library?
I did for a while. I'm not now, but I did for a little while.
So did you consider
because
yourself?
Because I can still read.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, because I can still read a little with the left side of my left eye, especially if I have the black background and white letters and large font. So I'll read, I have a Kindle subscription, and so I'll read books on my iPad because I can have everything large enough there.
Yeah, yeah. My wife also has a Kindle, and she is a avid reader. She reads and reads and reads. I tell you, it's something. So, but yeah, well, that's really great. Yeah, awesome. So let's talk a little bit now, dive into talking about the society. You mentioned how they got you acquainted with the blind low vision community in Missouri. I know you haven't really maybe had the opportunity yet to listen in on one of our membership calls or you know, anything like that. I tell you, Chris, we would love to have you to be a subscriber to our list. Bev can tell you that our email distribution list, it's an awesome list. We have a lot of fun on the list, but we also provide a lots and lots of information, a lot of great information, you know, whether you're talking about iPhone, iPads, JAWS, whatever it might be, we put out there as much information we can, but not just for those that are blind and visually impaired, but also for some of our sighted members. We put out information for them as well. So we have a lot of fun. We also have different things throughout the month. They have a sighted peer support group meeting on the second Tuesday of the month. We also have a our monthly membership call, which is on the third Monday of the month. So we got one coming up on the 15th. And then we have a fun night, which is on the third Thursday of the month, a fun night where we just get on there and we'll play trivia. We'll do all kinds of things like that. Listen to some music, tease one another, and we just have a great time. And then we also have the Bev does a peer support group. She does an awesome job, does a great job with that. And then I do a monthly tech tips. So just doing all different types of giving out tech tips on whatever device it might be. So there's just a lot of things going on throughout the month. And but it would really be helpful if you're interested in those different kind of things to subscribe to the list. I could send you an invite, and all you would have to do is just reply to the message. You don't do anything else. All you do is just hit reply, and it'll get you added to the list. If that's something you're interested in, we can talk about that after the interview, and I can get you the information, and we can get you subscribed. So let's go back to the verb. Oh, by the way, I wanted to ask you this before we actually move on. So what nationality is Carosella?
It's Italian.
That's what I thought. I knew that. All right. Very good. All right. So talking about BLVCM and all the different services and programs and all those different wonderful things. So have you got an opportunity to maybe like look at the website or get to know us a little bit more? You know, we're doing this interview because we want to interview you. We want to get to know you close and up front, but we also want to give you the opportunity to get to know us. You've been able to spend a little bit of time with Bev and get to know her, so which is really great. So have you had much of an opportunity to get to know anything about BLVCM?
I have a little bit, sure, because there are other people from the Society for the Blind that first told me about the group. Because I think when I first signed up, it would have been maybe last year. When did the group first start?
November last year. So okay, we're soon. We're soon approaching our anniversary.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was then. I had breast cancer last year, and so a friend of mine was telling me that, you know, we were talking about different things to get involved in and not involved in, because I'd been kind of away from things, you know, during all the treatment. And so it was at the end of the year last year where I was ready to kind of get back in the swing of things, and I was looking for opportunities to volunteer and opportunities to reengage with different organizations. And that's when I believe Donna first told me about the organization, and I believe I'm in the Facebook group because I know I keep seeing you guys seeing the organization in Facebook. So, So I'm sure I'd love to be able to get more involved.
Okay, excellent. You just now mentioned about the breast cancer that you had to battle, and then of course as you have had to battle with your vision loss, how were you able to come out on top? And it sounds like you certainly have, and to be able to manage your life and get on and move on with your life, having been faced with such things as vision loss and breast cancer. What is it about, I mean, for you to come out on top like what you have?
Well, I wish I could tell you.
She's a strong person. I can tell.
It happened easily, but I'll tell you the short version of a story that I had been dealing with breast cancer and had had surgery. And last August, I had gone to see my ophthalmologist, and I had to go see an orthopedic surgeon because I had both my knees replaced 5 years ago, but one of the orthopedic PAs told me I might need to have more surgery. And so I was thinking, okay, if I have to have more knee surgery, it's going to have to be in like 2026 because I am not having any more surgery this particular year. So I had gone to the ophthalmologist in the morning, and she said, so she gave me bad news about how my field of vision had narrowed quite a bit. I had done a visual field test. And so we had that conversation about, you know, okay, the hard truth is that, you know, it's highly likely you're going to be completely blind at some point. So I go from that to going over. I had to go have some x-rays done again before I would see the orthopedic surgeon. I'm less than a month out from having the breast cancer surgery and probably a couple weeks before I was going to start radiation. And everything just kind of hit me. So I'm sitting in the waiting room having an x-ray done. And I'm the only person in the waiting room. And I start having, you know, like I just start having some tears, you know. And so there's like a box of Kleenex over to the left. And I, you know, pick up the box and I'm like dabbing my eyes with Kleenex. And so the x-ray tech comes around the corner and she calls my name. And for some reason, I just like started crying more. And so it was, now it's kind of funny, but she sees me crying and she's like, oh, x-rays don't hurt. And I'm like, oh no, oh no. And I'm like, you know, dabbing my face with Kleenex. And so I go in the back and you have to have like this, there's this x-ray machine that you have to step up into. And it's in a dark room. And so because of my vision loss, you know, I can't see where we're going. And so she's like, okay, just step up in there. And I'm like, step up in what? You know, because everything's dark and gray and or black. And so she's like, walk up the steps and get, I said, okay, so I'm mostly blind. I need some help. Where are you telling me to go? Uh-huh. And so, okay. So she shows me, you know, where to go and how to get up into this machine. And, you know, so they do the x-rays and then she comes and helps me, you know, down the steps. And so then I go and change clothes and, you know, and so she's like, I'm really sorry that, you know, whatever else it is that you're going through, which of course, you know, that makes me start crying again. And so she tells me I have to go across the hall to the where the doctor is. And so she hands me the box of Kleenex and she's like, do you want to take this with you? Probably a good idea. You know, and so I go into the doctor's office and the nurse takes me back in the exam room. She pulls up my chart and she's like, ooh, wow, you've been through a lot this year, which of course makes me start crying again. Yes. You know, and so I'm like, okay, yes, I have. And so she just kind of looks at me like she's sort of shocked. And I, you know, and I'm like dabbing my face with Kleenex. So this continues to happen with the resident. And so I think they both must have told the orthopedic surgeon because I hear the voices out in the hallway when they're getting ready for him to come in. And so he comes in and he's all really happy and bouncy. And he's like, hey, we're going to have a great today, Chris. I've got good news for you. You don't need surgery. And so, hey, how's that make you feel? I'm like, boy, they really told this guy, look out, you've got this like woman crying, sobbing in there. Be careful how you treat her. And so it was just a very nice visit with him, but also the good news that, you know, I didn't have to have any additional surgery. So when I left there and I got home, I realized how exhausted I was because just the emotional aspect of the breast cancer, the vision, and finding out that morning that, you know, my vision was going to be worse than we thought maybe it was going to be. Yeah. And then just any other kind of, you know, health issue. So it was a tough day because it just, everything hit me that particular day. So I refer to it as, you know, my meltdown day.
Yeah.
I haven't had one of those since, but you know, that just
just listen to her and you just want to put your arms around her and just say it's going to be okay, you're going to get through this thing. You know, and everything. Just offer support to her and just reach out to her and just you know, and try to offer some comfort, you know.
And that's what's great about this group too, Chris, is we've been there. Maybe not I don't think Chip's had breast cancer, but but we've, you know, faced these struggles too, and we're here to support each other.
That's great. That's great to know. The good news is with the breast cancer, I've since found out that there's only a 5% chance that it'll come back. So they caught it early and they got everything. That's the good news.
You bet. Good. Well, Bev, I'm going to push it over to you. I tell you, this has just been so remarkable. Chris, Bev and I love doing these interviews because not only do we get to know people, but we have a lot of fun in doing it. And we just want to continue. Just unfortunately, we don't have as much time doing it as what we would like. So we're getting close to the end here, but I'm going to let Bev bring us all the way back home. So, Bev, I'm pushing it back over to you.
Okay, I'm going to run a couple things by you real quick here, Chris, that back to the peer support that I do on the fourth Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. And it is, I've got a title because a friend of mine that I go to Friday morning meetings really early mm-hmm. here in Lake St. Louis, and his daughter is blind. And I told him one time, I said, you know what, Greg, I miss mingling. You know, everybody else is going from table to table or, you know, different groups mingling with each other. Mm-hmm. And I kind of stand there and wait for people to come to me. You know, I hate to use my cane and interrupt somebody and bump into them. So, you know, I told him I missed that. He made a statement that really made me stop and think. He said, do you think the general public is uncomfortable with someone with a disability not knowing what to say? And I just thought, well, they should get to know me. and they'll find out that I won't let that stop them. We'll break the ice. And I do try to find conversations. I think I inherited the gift of gab from my dad. It's his fault. But what do you think? Do you think people are uncomfortable with someone who's disabled? And I don't like the word disabled. I just can't see you right now.
I do. I think that was a great question for him to ask. And in my experience, yes, I think there are people who are uncomfortable with it. They don't know what to say. And especially, so I get the statement a lot where you don't look blind. What do you think blind is supposed to look like? You know, I look how they perceive normal to be because they, you know, and even my sister, when I first lost the vision in my right eye, my sister was, she'd get up really close and look in my eye and she goes, I can't tell. And I'm like, well, you're not supposed to be able to tell. You know, I can tell because I can't see you with that eye. But, you know, so, and as I explain to people, like I, like you, mingling is not something that I can do very well because, I'm either going to knock something over, I'm going to bump into somebody, I'm going to run into a table, I'm going to fall or hurt myself or whatever. And so, like, just this past weekend, my cousin's son got married, and at the reception, I just kind of stayed put because the tables were kind of close together, and there were different kinds of surfaces, some grass, you know, some concrete, some, you know, sidewalk, some rock. And I just didn't want to take any chance on, you know, like moving around. And so somebody there was asking me some questions about my vision loss. And so I was just pretty matter of fact about it. And then they even said, I don't even know what to say about that. Like, should I say that I'm really sorry? And I said, no, you don't have to say you're sorry. It's not your fault.
Yeah,
you know,
you didn't do it.
And I said, here's the thing. I don't mind empathy, but I don't like pity. You know, that's the part that, you know, when people will make some sort of comment where it's just sort of like a, oh God, that's so terrible. You know, they go on and on, and they go on and saying something that's so inappropriate, but they don't know what else to say. So they think like they should say something. It only ends up making it ends up making me feel better. It ends up making me angry because I'm just standing there waiting for them to finish. And then I just say, okay, well, you know, thanks for your feedback, you know, or you know, whatever, based on whatever they're saying. So yeah, I don't mind empathy. I appreciate empathy, especially if it's someone who is asking me, do I need some assistance? But I don't like pity. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what happens for a lot of people when they deal with someone who's disabled in some way. They go straight to the pity mode. And you know, I just don't think many of us appreciate that part. Help and assistance, empathy, sure. Pity, no.
Right. Yes, yes. And I want to be as independent as possible, you know.
Exactly.
And then when you're with other people, they may want to do all this for you that you can do yourself, you know. You know, but they get pleasure. You know, they get rewards from it, so let them do it.
But you know what's funny too? I've had that conversation with people too about, you know, don't make my issue about you. Because when, especially if it's a stranger who's trying to do something, like I had a situation where I was crossing Brentwood Boulevard, and because I don't see anything on the right-hand side, I didn't know that this guy was standing there. And when the light changed, so, you know, I have my cane, and when the light changed, this guy just grabbed my arm and started like dragging me across the street. And, you know, that in and of itself is terrifying, whether you can see a person or not, when somebody grabs you and starts, you know, pulling you. And so I'm pulling my arm away from him. And I had to do like a 3/4 turn since I have to see him from the left side. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he said, I'm helping you across the street. I said, I don't need your help. And he's like, yes, you do. And he's like, wouldn't let go of my arm.
Oh, to the point where
there was a guy in a truck at the intersection. He gets out of his truck and he's like, ma'am, do you need help? I said, I think so. And the guy who grabs my arm, you know, he starts walking away then, and he looks at me and he goes, bitch, I was just trying to help you. And I'm like shocked at this guy's attitude, you know?
Oh,
and so I just said, hey, next time ask somebody if they need help.
Right.
And, you know, he storms off, and I thought, here's a prime example of somebody who he thinks this is about him.
Yeah.
Like, he can go home and tell people, oh, look, I helped a blind lady across the street today. Pat me on the back. You know, and instead he terrified me because he's grabbing me and dragging me.
Yeah.
You know, because he grabbed my right hand, which is the cane hand. You know, so, So it was you know, when people try to do that kind of stuff, that's not something that they should do when dealing with somebody with some kind of disability. Like, ask first and don't just assume.
Yes, yes. And I love those situations, you know, that we can share with each other. And how did you handle this situation? You know, so I always look, did I handle it properly? Communication is the big, big thing, you know. Talk to each other. I know we're getting kind of tight on here, but I got to ask, do you have a hobby?
I think for me, my hobby is just something that I've just always done, and that's volunteering. So I spend a lot of time volunteering for different nonprofits.
That's great. That's great.
Chip, she gets a person of the year award. I love this gal.
There you go. Yeah.
I might have to move to Brentwood for this.
We'll at least come for lunch.
Yes, we'll see. We'll have to do that. We'll meet somewhere in between. I guess that's at the river.
I'm sure.
All right, Chip, it's all yours to wind it down.
All right, so I had just had the one last question, Chris. What would you like for your legacy to be? What would you like when people talk about Chris Caracella? What's the one thing that you would like to be identified for, or what would you like your legacy to be?
It's a great question. I think for me, it would probably be, just because, you know, we've talked about some of the health issues that I've had to deal with, but there have been, you know, different things throughout my life that I think one of the things that I'm most proud of is learning how to adapt to different situations.
Yeah.
And so I think the resilience of being able to figure it out and deal with whatever I have to. And it doesn't mean it makes it easy, but that's always been a part of my personality. And so I think it's been, you know, something that certainly has been tested over the past couple of years in particular. And so that's something that, you know, I'm an aunt to a nephew and two nieces. And, you know, if I thought about what would I want them to remember me for, it would be the kind of thing where it's like, no matter what no matter what happened, she faced it, and she, you know, she did what she could, and she wasn't a victim, and she figured it out, and, you know, she was a better person for it, and she helped other people along the way.
Very
good.
There
you go.
You can tell, Bev, that no matter what life has thrown her way, she's come out at the other end as the victor. You can really tell that in what she shared with us today.
Yes, yes. I'm very proud to say I've got to know her.
Yes.
Thank you both so much. I appreciate that.
Well, Chris, we want to thank you for being our special guest here today on Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. So thank you again so much. We really do appreciate it so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you know someone that you would like for Bev and I to interview here on Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri, you can have them give me a call, Chip Haley, at 417-540-9703.
Or Beverly Cascaden at 636-561-6947.
You never know. You might hear yourself next time right here on Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. Enjoy your day, everybody, and we'll catch you right back here next time with another great, awesome interview. Bye-bye for now.